gentlemen, and welcome. This is the AA conference meeting. In opening it, I should like to read the definition so ably given on the second page inside the cover of our monthly publication, The Grapevine. Alcoholics Anonymous is a fellowship of men and women who share their experience, strength, and hope with each other, that they may solve their common drinking problem and help others to recover from alcoholism. The only requirement for membership is an honest desire to stop drinking. AA has no dues or fees. It is not allied with any sect, denomination, politics, organization, or institution. Does not wish to engage in any controversy, neither endorses nor opposes any causes. Our primary purpose is to stay sober and help other alcoholics to achieve sobriety. The AA program is incorporated in the 12 steps. The AA Book of Experience, Alcoholics Anonymous, and other literature, including the 12 points of tradition. If there are any members of the press present, could we again ask their cooperation in respecting one of our most important traditions, that of anonymity. And a little note as a reminder, please, no smoking inside the auditorium. Thank you for cooperating. You will hear this afternoon from several members of Alcoholics Anonymous from varying points throughout this country. Each will discuss two of the traditions, briefly and simply, and thereafter a summation of the proceedings. Could I therefore at this time introduce our first speaker who will discuss traditions one and two, Olin from Dallas, Texas.
Good evening, everybody. First, I'll read the first tradition. Our common welfare should come first. Personal recovery depends upon AA unity. I couldn't help but think just a second ago when I was going through a little moment of silent meditation how different it was maybe 4.5 years ago when I first came into AA. How different my little meditation was just that second ago. How I offered up a little quickie that this convention would be good for everybody, that everybody would take home with them the message that it's intended for them to get. In other words, I was thinking of everybody and how different that was of my moment's meditation of maybe 4.5 years ago when I first came into AA, and believe me, I can't help but feel like that might be a weakness of maybe all of us. We did send up prayers of all descriptions, most of them rather hollow, but maybe we ask for a little bit more just for ourselves. The AA tradition, as I understand, number one, is that Alcoholics Anonymous, beyond all question of a doubt, must be number one, because without it, you and I certainly wouldn't be here, and certainly not in attendance this fine convention. We are only a part. We must forget our big eyes. We must forget everything, but that AA must be given a green light, and AA must be assisted. And we must be, as I see it, a little bit jealous of what Alcoholics Anonymous and what Alcoholics Anonymous as a group, each of our groups, mean to us as a whole. We must forever keep it simple. We must keep it clean and unorganized and fair to every member. Number two, for our group purpose, there is but one ultimate authority, a loving God as he may express himself in our group conscience. Our leaders are but trusted servants. They do not govern. We all know that there are no big shots in AA. We all know that each of us as a member of AA understands AA in his own way. We come to Cleveland, and I have seen a lot of people that I admire with their long years of sobriety. I do like to see their grace and their ease and the manner in which they conduct themselves. And if I don't watch myself, I will become maybe a little bit jealous of a lot of them. That is not the AA way. Rather, I respect them, and I'm glad to see such fine guys and girls that came in ahead of me and paved the way for this thing that I know is my salvation today. Number one, Alcoholics Anonymous, and then I'll put myself in there. I'll get what I can out of the program, always keeping in mind that if I don't put Alcoholics Anonymous first, that if I do not listen and heed well to those that have made a success, a personal success, out of the way in which they handle the AA program, then I have erred someplace. I want Alcoholics Anonymous to always be number one in my life. And a long time ago, it wasn't. Thank you very much.
Thank you, Olin. For our second speaker, we will discuss tradition 3 and 4, Dick of Cleveland, Ohio.
Good afternoon, folks. Traditions are the result of experience, are the result of habit and precedent. They're historical. Traditions are the end result of what has preceded, which in the long run prescribes future conduct. And my assignment to discuss step 3 recalls some of the earlier days in AA when we find here established a tradition which says the only requirement for AA membership is a desire to stop drinking, when at the outset there was great curiosity as to whether men who had been approached and had decided to come along were eligible for membership. In many cases, committees were formed to look the brother over and see if he qualified, see if he was eligible. After which he was probably, in rare cases which had been true, was put on a probationary period for some time. After he had matriculated, gone through the primary classes, and then been able to recite his lessons, he was then given a badge or a grip. Today, and just in passing, sometimes it would be a good idea for some of the elder statesmen to stop and ponder whether they could have passed the test they were imposing on other people. Probably not. Today, the only requirement for membership in AA, which has been established through precedent and historical endeavors, lies wholly and solely within himself or herself. If one wants to join a lodge or a club, they go there with an affirmation of the fact that they want to join. Certainly, who are we to question a man or woman who comes to us with probably one of the most destructive habits on earth and asks our help by merely signifying that he too wants to go along with us? Thus, I think that tradition number 3 is not ours to question, but to welcome. Number 4 says each group should be autonomous, except in matters affecting other groups of AA as a whole. Brother, in Cleveland, we had autonomy. Some years ago, some efforts were made here to propose the opening of a downtown central office, which meant bringing that idea before the entire membership for approval, and incidentally, a little money. And the gentleman who was trying his best to spread the cause was denied the privilege of talking to his fellow members in several of the Cleveland groups. Now, there is autonomy. Printed material was prepared. Some of the groups would not allow it displayed or to be given to their followers. There is autonomy. Again, small measure of history was being born because the various autonomic groups could not prevent their members from interchanging. In other words, got around any of them. And the office was open, and it served 7 successful years. Performed a tremendously vital service in Cleveland. You see, the activity was for all of Cleveland. 2 members decided that it shouldn't be. But the will of the entire membership finally was felt and heard, and resulted in this successful endeavor. Now, everything that has gone before, which has created everything we do, this meeting and every other meeting, everything we do, is based on some precedent by now, 15 years worth. Hence, perhaps we are ready to recognize that tradition has become habit.
Thank you, Dick. And now to discuss the fifth and sixth traditions, Gene from Toledo, Ohio.
Mr. Chairman and friends, I will read first the fifth tradition. Each group has but one primary purpose, to carry its message to the alcoholic who still suffers. Well, of course, the message referred to here, as you know, is the message of our program of recovery, the 12 steps of AA. The 12 steps contain the substance of Alcoholics Anonymous, spirit of Alcoholics Anonymous. Perhaps what we are discussing this afternoon has more to do with the form than the substance. But as you know, in all human endeavor, it is necessary to have a vehicle, an instrumentality, an organism of some sort through which an activity, particularly one of a spiritual nature, may be conveyed. You know, they played a trick on me this afternoon and told me that I was restricted to 5 minutes, and I would say that that's a hell of a trick to play on a lawyer. Especially when we're all talking, even after 15 years, about a subject on which none of us profess to be authorities. I'm reminded a little of the story I heard the other day about the weekly meeting of the Boy Scout troop, in which the boys were to report on their good deeds for the week, and one of them got up before the scoutmaster, and he said, Johnny and Phil and Terry and I helped an old lady across the street. The scoutmaster said, well, how come it took three of you? Well, Johnny said the old lady didn't want to go. And perhaps that is quite apropos of what we're discussing here. I remember in my early reading of the big book, something stood out in Bill's story about the destruction of self-centeredness, the abnegation of self, which he found necessary in order to recover from alcoholism, and which the good Dr. Silkworth said he tried to bring about, the change he tried to bring about in those that came to him. And so I'm suggesting this afternoon, in my view, of the subject of the traditions, and particularly this one, that each of us individually and each of us in our groups must stand ready to renounce self, to be willing to abandon that which seems to be fallacious and which might be detrimental to the greater good of all. Each group has but one primary purpose, to carry its message to the alcoholic who still suffers. Well, you ask me, what other purpose could there be? Well, we all know very well the seductive detours that may be offered to any AA group. There are many ramifications of AA, many of which have merit. For instance, the cultivation of social life and activity in itself is a laudable thing. We have long since had our customs, you might say, of anniversaries, perhaps group anniversaries, summer picnics. And in our own community, we have AA frolic and fun of all decent kinds. But I think we can recognize that that phase of our activity might be overemphasized. A group, a particular group, might very well gain a reputation as a bunch of good fellows who throw good parties. But wouldn't it be a better test of the success of that group to measure their growth in alcoholics souls that are helped toward recovery through the activity of that group? Sometimes I think the word spiritual is misleading to some of us in AA. We treat it as synonymous with the word religious, and I don't believe it is. I'm merely suggesting, as my opinion, that we would have a better understanding of the word spiritual if we would apply it to everyday life. There are positive, good spiritual characteristics, and there are negative ones. In our own circles, we'll speak of someone as being, there's a fellow who's loyal. There's a fellow who's devoted. There's a man who's energetic. Of a soldier, he's a brave man. Of a worker, he's industrious. He's on the job. He's capable. And all of those adjectives that I have used denote and connote spiritual qualities. The opposite of those things we all know. They may be vices. They may be even some of the deadly sins. And so I think when we speak of our groups as being spiritual entities, we can understand them better in that light when we say that the only excuse the group has for its existence, for its continued operation, and the only measure of its effectiveness is carrying the message. And the message is the content and the understanding of the 12 steps of recovery. On the sixth tradition, which I will read, an AA group ought never endorse, finance, or lend the AA name to any related facility or outside enterprise, lest problems of money, property, and prestige divert us from our primary spiritual aim. Well, there again, I speak of those green pastures that are so tempting. What are these diversionary activities? Well, I can mention a few of them which are obvious. And they would be hospitals, for instance, clubs, drying out places, educational enterprises, literature, perhaps, the authorship of literature. All of these things, again, may be offshoots of the growth of knowledge and the eagerness for public information about this problem with which we deal. I can recall in our own community, 7 years ago, we had no facilities whatever for hospitalization. Rarely, some individual might be taken to a general hospital because his doctor was on the staff there and had him in. But for the ordinary run-of-mind drunk, there was just no place we could take him except into our homes. And I remember in one stage of our development, we had one of our members had a friend who was manager of a fairly good hotel in Toledo, and they were very generous with us, and we at one time had as many as 4 and 5 patients at a time in rooms in that hotel, and we AAs were alternating on shifts to help these drunks get sober. They said that when you walked into the lobby of the Willard, you could smell the formaldehyde. And that went on for a little while. Well, then all of a sudden, it seemed like the Lord sent us a great benefactor. You know, we in AA, sometimes I think we become almost superstitious about what Providence will do for us. But that's another story. I think Providence has been with us from the beginning of time. It took a long, long time, but there's no question that in my mind, of the divine origin of AA. But this man, as I say, seemed to have been sent from heaven. He was a drunk, and he was a man of means and rather high standing in the community. In a recent business transaction, he had acquired a building for which he, at that moment, had no use. Now, he came into AA, and I can remember hearing him in his second or third meeting, he just caught fire. He picked up that book and he said, why, I could have written that book. Well, he might have, but he didn't. And he said, I remember another peculiarity about him. You know, we always harped on the first drink, but he said it wasn't the first one, it was the second one. That was a bad one for him, the second one. Well, he proposed that he would set up a hospital in this building, which he had on his hands. And we in our group were about to undertake that. We were going to run that hospital. Now, please understand me, folks. I, as far as I know, there may be a number of groups throughout the country that do conduct some kind of hospital facility. But I'm telling you that the only thing that saved us from what would have been a colossal error was the hand of Providence. Because, number one, our great philanthropist didn't get along very well with this program. I guess it was that second drink. Number two, he passed to another life the following summer. I think this was a period of 5 or 6 months. So we didn't get our hospital. Now, the point is that I, at that time, would have been I would have gone very, very eagerly for a hospital that would have been run by our group, and I'm convinced that it would have. Suppose we'd gotten into it at that time. And here our poor friend, our poor misguided friend, misses the boat, and then ups and dies on us and leaves us with his estate to deal with and an alcoholic hospital running and a piece of property that has to be liquidated. It's just an illustration. But it is, as Dick has said, tradition is something that, like everything else we've gotten in AA, it seems like we had to get it the hard way. We got it through trial and error. And the things that are suggested here today are things that are suggested for the greater good of all. And as a lawyer, I can assure you that the substance of our activity, the spiritual content of it, is in our 12 steps and in our carrying those 12 steps to other alcoholics. But in corporate activity, and I mean by that any form or ramification of business activity, anything that involves money, it does seem the better part of wisdom, not alone in the experience of Alcoholics Anonymous, but I can assure you, from the standpoint of a lawyer, to let those enterprises stand on their own feet, detached, segregated, separated from AA. There are a lot of good things that can be done in the field of alcoholism, and with many of them, and perhaps most of them, I believe we are in hearty accord. But most of them we shouldn't touch. We may cooperate. We may sustain by our cooperation. But it'd be much better if we didn't try to manage, in my humble opinion. Let us be devoted to the real purpose of Alcoholics Anonymous, the real purpose of our home groups, and my real purpose and yours in life. There has been entrusted to us a tremendous, a powerful message for human good. And let us be singly, unitedly devoted to carrying that message. Thank you. Thank you, Gene. And now to discuss tradition 7 and 8, Fred from Florida.
Mr. Chairman and friends, tradition number 7, every AA group ought to be fully self-supporting, declining outside contributions. I dare say that in the early days of AA, that was very easily understood because of small groups we met in homes, and money was beside the point. We began to grow. We looked for larger quarters. And the first thing you know, a little light bill, a rent became involved. We were not too particular about the passing of the hat at these little home meetings. But when these other things came up, we had to sit up and take a little notes. And, of course, you know, as tradition tells us in the passing of the hat, we all remember one thing that we learn or try to learn very early in AA, and that is our honesty. I believe, as a matter of record, we have not lost a hat. Now, a little early enthusiasm went with this money becoming involved, and some of us will say who might have been a little bit more fortunate than others, we're throwing those dollar bills in once and twice a week, sometimes three times a week, all according to what our ambitions were. And then we begin to do a little figuring, and 2 and 2 made 4, and 4 and 4 made 8. These are $8. That's a lot of money. I have to cut this down. So we start dropping to a half and then to the 2-bit style. And the first thing you know, we wasn't worrying about the flavor of scotch anymore, but it was a very noticeable scotch edict that we would go all the way to nickels and dimes. And then when the lights and the rent was due, we was running a little short. Now, along with that and the growth, I might say that more people became very much interested in our work. And one of the first things they asked was, how can I help? What can I give you? Well, we said very sorry that we don't accept any outside donations. We grew, and the public became more and more interested. And some people who were very much interested in our work decided that it would be a very mighty fine gesture to make larger offers that we would fall for. I'd say just recently, it was last year sometime, that in Miami, we had an offer of $25,000. That's a lot of money. And a lot of ears went up. We were kind of straining at the traces. But fortunately, there was enough among us, we might say, who had read and understood tradition. We remembered having been told that in the early days, one of the greatest mistakes that ever could have been made, as far as our organization of Alcoholics Anonymous was concerned, was to accept a large amount of money. So the consensus of opinion was no on the 25G. Tradition number 8, Alcoholics Anonymous should remain forever non-professional, but our service centers may employ special workers. This has been given a lot of room for thought, discussions, and in some cases, arguments. Like a great many other things, we have been able to iron out the wrinkles, and along with being more or less schooled in the development of understanding, we arrived at certain things whereby today I don't believe we have too much trouble. From time to time, and we're never going to please them all, we do hear a few grunts and groans and gripes about the man or the woman who has a job in AA. If we will all but remember this, that there is a job to be filled, a job that will take time and effort, and a job that you would have to pay someone for. If, and this is another consensus of opinion over a period of years, the alcoholic or the member of AA who was qualified, we feel is justified to take that job, and we feel justified in paying them. It's a whole lot different than some things that might turn up from time to time. In my early days in AA, as a young secretary, being exposed to something a little bit new and different every once in a while, I had the novel experience, you might call it, of being offered $2,000 for saving a member of a family. Two uncles and a brother pleaded with me to take this money and take over this boy so that we could straighten him out. Now, you know, there was just a little element of temptation there, but I had to say no. It's a good thing for me that I did. It's a good thing for anybody who might be exposed to temptations of that kind to just take time out to think. A thought won't take more than a few seconds, and if you understand as I did at that time, your answer too would be no. In reference to these jobs that I mentioned, right at this time, here in Cleveland, where all you allergic, convention-minded people are so many of us here, if you will bear in mind the enormity of this job, the responsibility, and that it fell on one man, that man has given up considerable of his time, many weeks in advance of this convention. To handle it and handle it properly meant full time. There are people, professional people, experienced in this line of work who we would have to have paid a high salary. They took it onto themselves here to put this man in this job and to pay him. My own personal opinion, and I have talked to a great many people, is that the man should not be criticized for taking money for this enormous job that he has done. I think that about covers 7 and 8 in reference to the professional end of our program. We do not professionalize in anything. We pay those only who can do the work that is so necessary in the growing up of our organization. Thank you.
Thank you, Fred. And now to discuss traditions 9 and 10, George, for the Carlsbad Group of the San Diego, California area. George, if you will.
Ladies and gentlemen, my friends, I have been given the assignment, traditions 9 and 10, and I shall not presume upon your intelligence with any lengthy discussion. In fact, I feel like Jonah did when the whale swallowed him. The whale turned and said, "Jonah, I feel sick to my stomach." And Jonah said, "We'd both feel a hell of a sight better if you kept your big mouth shut." I will read tradition 9. AA, as such, ought never be organized, but we may create service boards or committees directly responsible to those they serve. Now, in my opinion, and from my experience in different groups in the several years which I've been a member of Alcoholics Anonymous, I found that there was a tendency for the gray beard to take charge. In my own case, I came into AA in a very large area, a large city group. Afterwards, I moved to a smaller group, and I hadn't learned that I had not filed down my ego sufficiently, so I undertook to carry to this small group of Alcoholics Anonymous the city slickers' idea that we did so-so in the big center. You do so-and-so here, and I confess I more or less have that idea. Today I wish to say, gratefully to Divine Providence, that a little of my ego has filed itself down to the point where now I realize that each group is its own. It elects its officers and controls itself at all times. Remember that we are all united for our common welfare and the personal recovery depends upon it. And in all these traditions, it is a fact that they coordinate like our 12 steps. I'm not going to say any further on that tradition because I do not presume upon your intelligence, my dear friend. Now on tradition 10. Alcoholics Anonymous has no opinion on outside issues. Hence, the AA name ought never be drawn into public controversy. That is a very important tradition and one that could be abused. In my own case, and I say that because I am a human being with all the frailties of mankind, even though I have spent several years trying to follow the AA program, there are many times when I've been called on as a speaker. I've been in public life at times, not as a speaker, but as a singer, and I still have that actor's ego. And I thought it might be a good time here to use my name. Get a little billing here. Figuring this thing out to myself, I see now the wisdom and the good old common sense in all of our traditions. We today now, the names of our speakers here on your platform are mentioned to you. And I think it's right. You want to know who we are, where we came from. It's right. It's good for the work. But when we reach public level, then we must, and I think it's right, keep our anonymity. In my humble opinion, anonymity is the great spiritual gift that alcoholics has had all through its life and the spiritual milepost that will lead us down through tradition forever. Thank you.
Thank you, George. I may be permitted to digress just a moment. When George, in his opening, turned to me and said, "Mr. Chairman," I literally shrunk back. Somehow or other, the old idea, "Go away, you drunken bum," still hangs around when anybody turns around. And now to discuss traditions 11 and 12. Charlie from Boston, Massachusetts. through most of the previous discussion about traditions, these two have been talked about, because I think they're the background of all we have to offer. And the most important thing about AA is what we have to offer. We have to offer security to a beaten, broken down, defeated, frustrated alcoholic. That's all. A home, shelter. In all these matters, I can only interpret them with relationship to Kylie. Why, I don't know. It isn't that he's very important, but I can't seem to interpret them as how they would affect you. But I can insofar as they affect me. To show you what I mean, in my latest revision of the 12 steps, and from time to time I revise them, so far no one has published any of my revisions, by the way, I have taken out the personal pronoun we and our and substituted I and my. For very, very, very good reason. Over the years, I've become an expert diagnostician of other people's failings. And that doesn't do very much good. I have become very adept at confessing other people's sins and weaknesses. And that doesn't do very much good for Kylie. And so I think this step should say, I made a decision to turn my will over to the care of God as I understand it. Because I can't speak for we. Why do I bring this out? Bring this out because my drinking, which I think perhaps had something to do with my alcoholism, came as a result of certain people not being willing to make adjustments on themselves. I would have been all right, but they wouldn't conform. They included many people. My wife, my employer. At times, I took on some very worthwhile adversaries. The Roman Catholic Church, they had a few weaknesses which they wouldn't change, and as a result, alcoholism for Kylie. The United States Navy was a fairly tough outfit, too. I tackled them for a while. I gave them a hell of a run for it, too, while I left, by the way. Even in AA, I found that certain people needed to adjust themselves. As time went on, I learned that any progress that would be made as the result of Kylie making adjustments on Kylie. God, what a bitter lesson. It was brutal. It was almost worse than drinking. And believe me, that was bad. But that was the only way there was to be any progress. And so, with regard to these traditions, how are we going to enforce them? Are we going to set up spy committees to see who goes out and makes a little touch someplace in the name of AA and puts the money in his pocket or something like that? Sometimes we forget that we have a membership of 100,000, what's a good term for them? Frauds, con men, phonies. I don't know what you might call them. This is after they get through drinking. I'm not talking about when they're drinking. They're pretty good people. This is after they get through. How shall we rule them? How shall we rule you? Get that? We shall rule you if Kylie makes adjustments on Kylie. Some few years ago, down at the Yale School for Alcoholic Studies, Bill was submitted to a question and answer period after he had given a talk about AA government. And a little dried up, and I hope there are no Baptists in the house today. I don't know. I really don't know what it means, but this guy was a Baptist minister. Believe me, he was dry. Got up and said words something like this. It seems as though he had some deacons and boards of directors to contend with, and they weren't making the proper adjustments. And he said, This wonderful government, this organization, just enough organization to prevent organization, is a wonderful thing. And I'd really like to take it and transplant it into my church.
so that these babies would mind their own business and let me run this thing the way it should be run. He didn't say that, that's what he meant. And tell me how I can do that. And I thought that was a tough question. I thought he had, pretty well wrapped up. I didn't know what he was going to say. I thought he was going to give me the old razzmatazz, that easy does-it routine that he gives you when he hasn't got the answer. That's another story. I'll tell you about that sometime. I go down to New York and they ask Bill the most compounded question in the world and they come back and they say, did you get the answer? Yeah. Well, what did he say? He said, easy does it. The guy only heard it 38,000 times in the last 52 weeks. He went down to New York and paid about $50 to get back and forth and find out, easy does it. That's the answer. But Bill thought for a moment and he slowly said to the guy, I think I've got the answer for you. He said, you find some way to get the bite on your parishioners, like John Barleycorn has got the bite on us, and you won't need any laws or rules or regulations. And I have come to find out, making these adjustments on Kylie, that if I don't, John Barleycorn, in all probability, will again put the bite on me, and I'll be back where I started, and it's too long a road back, believe me. So with these traditions, I'm sure that's how we'll enforce them. I will help to promote AA publicity by attraction, not by promotion. By living the kind of life where people say, well, I don't know, in my little neighborhood where I live, typically Irish neighborhood, I suppose, a lot of rebels who resist everything, they don't really know what's going on. They know something has happened. Lightning struck and the bomb is over, but God's sake, keep quiet and don't mention it till he belongs to something. I don't know what it is, but let him stay the hell in there. Don't get him out. That is publicity by attraction, believe me. I don't want to bore you with too many details about myself, but God has been good. I have been a very, very lucky guy. Things have happened to me which I can explain in no other way. There isn't any other explanation for them, except that that's the way it should be. For a purpose. I have been tossed into a position where I'm a chairman of a board of a public body that's going to spend $200 million in the next 4 years. Can you imagine tossing Kylie of old into a job like that? Can you imagine the terrific responsibility when the whole community in which I live knows that I'm an ex-drunk? It's a matter of public record. Everybody knows it. I can't walk down the street and say, I'm in church now and I used to be a drunk. They know. I don't mean by that I publicly allow my name to be used and say, the great Kylie is now a member of Alcoholics Anonymous. No, that isn't the way it's done. But people know. People have a way of finding out, particularly when you're tossed into a position like that. And I say literally tossed for no good reason that I can say. Nothing to do with ability, nothing to do with talent, but just that's the way it should be. It puts an added burden on my shoulders because, human beings being what they are, in and out of AA, people like to see the heads of the great fall. It might be quite an event in some people's lives if Kylie did go back to drinking. Perhaps I'd stay sober now for spite. I wouldn't give a bastard up my set of It's a great lesson to me down through the years in AA. I have had a crowd of guys around me, my friends. At times, I didn't know that was a word for them, but now I know that it is. Who have been great deflators, who have been able to keep me in line, who have been really very, very good for me. They are still my friends. And that's why it's very simple for me to have the most important thing in my whole life being to submerge myself as just another drunk. This great organization. Thank you, Carl.
interpretation of a portion of the traditions. A little yarn they told some time ago about the lush who went over to see his doctor. The doctor talked with him quite a bit, and it seems that our friend Joe was quite hard of hearing. The doctor spoke long and loud. And when he got through it, he said, "And furthermore, Joe, if you don't stop drinking, you'll probably become stone deaf." Our friend Joe looked at the good doctor and said, "I think I like what I've been drinking better than what I've been hearing." Whatever your feelings are at this moment, if we excite discussion among you as to these traditions and what they mean to this movement of ours, we will have accomplished our end. But I do know and feel that the following summation, perhaps there will be no question about. And so I'm very happy now to introduce Bill Wilson.
When you and I are 10 years older, I think we shall all look back upon this day as a great one in our history. I think we shall account it the day when we passed from adolescence into maturity, the day in which we looked our future in the face, the day in which we took great decisions affecting our destiny, and may those decisions be the right one. You've heard a perfectly marvelous summary of our AA tradition, expressed from all quarters of this society of ours. They have literally welled up here in front of us from the grassroots, the distillate of our experience in living and working together, the platform upon which we expect to stand in unity for so long as God may need it. It may pay to take a moment, let go back a little, and recount some of the steps that we have taken in arriving at these conclusions. You would like to know how these traditions were really formed, put to paper, repeatedly responded. I suppose some here would say that I am the author of these traditions. But that is not true. It is really not true in any sense of the word. I held the pen that wrote the words. But the words are yours, because they are only a mirror which reflect the experiences we have had over the years. As I glance over these short sentences, a whole rush of reminiscence comes up in my mind, and I marvel how far we have come. And I almost begin to agree that we have laid a platform out of our experience quite unlike in some respects that any men and women ever stood upon before. It may be, in some ways, that no society like ours has ever been known. So contrary are some of these practices to our human nature. So contrary are they to the practices of the world outside. And speaking of the world outside, we all know its state. It is in state of more and more and more division. Praise God, while society about us has been disintegrating, we have been integrated. We have been unified. But let us make no mistake, and let us not congratulate ourselves. We shall be subject to these great storms which beat upon other societies of men. And the test is yet before us, whether these forces within and without that divide all other societies today shall sometime rend ours and tear it apart. That will be the test of our maturity. But how did we get where we are now?
Well, I look at these first two traditions that have to do with the common welfare, which states that in matters touching group unity and the survival of this movement, that obviously the common welfare must come first. And I look at this funny one, which says that there is no authority in Alcoholics Anonymous excepting a loving God expressing himself through the group conscience. That sounds rather odd in this modern world, doesn't it? And isn't this a queer-sounding one? Set it alongside of what you read in the newspapers. Our leaders are but trusted servants. They do not govern. Well, there's a great weller of experience that we've had that lies behind those simple statements. I remember when the temptation first fell on me, when it was a question of the welfare of this society or of my personal welfare. Things have been going on very slowly, 3 or 4 years. 30 or 40 of us had turned our faces to the light, so that they stayed that way. Financially, the Wilsons were very much on the bum. Lois was still working in her department store. People were saying, when is he going to quit being a missionary and go to work? So I was up one day at Old Charlie Town, at Town's Hospital, New York, where I had that also very odd hot flash. Old Charlie Town, the owner, who since proved himself a wonderful friend of this movement, called me in his office and he said, "Hey, Bill," he said, "when Silkworth first brought you into this place, I was pretty skeptical. I'm not exactly what you call a man of God. I'm a man of business, frankly. But," he said, "I can't help being impressed. 30 or 40 of you have gotten well of something that I know to be practically hopeless. I can see this thing going by chain reaction until someday this movement fills Madison Square Garden." "Well," I said, "Charlie, I think you're an optimist. Remember, there are only 40 of us now." "Well," he said, "I really believe that. But," said Charlie, "what gets my goat is this. Here you're dishing out this stuff to these drunks day after day. They're going back to work. They are earning good living. What about you? Your wife is still working to support you to do this." He said, "Look, back in 1929, in the days of the stricken stockbrokers here in New York, this dump used to make a good many thousands of dollars a month. Now," he said, "just look at this balance sheet." He said, "we're barely getting along." "Now," said he, "isn't it a fact that Silkworth helped you a lot in this place? Isn't it a fact that this so-called spiritual awakening of yours took place in here?" And I said, "Yes." "Well," said Charlie, "isn't it very logical now that I should give you an office here?" He said, "as a matter of fact, I'll give you a third of the profit. And in a perfectly ethical way, you know, we could advertise that you're here, that the work started here, and then you could eat." Then came my hour of temptation, and many of us have met the same hour. And you know what wonderful rationalizers we drunks are? I said, "Why? The Bible tells me what to do. The good book says the laborer is worthy of his hire." So I went back home, and Lois was cooking supper after a hard day's work. I said, "Well, Lois, we're really going to eat. Old Charlie is going to put me on a drawing account up there, and we're going to move in. We'll carry on from up there. We'll have an office and assured income and the cut on the profits of that place." Well, she wasn't quite so excited as I was, but I fancy the sight of groceries looked good to her. That evening, we had a meeting down in our little front parlor, just a handful of people. I told them the good news. And their faces fell. None of them wanted to say a word. They didn't say very much, but I could tell by the look in their eyes what they were thinking. And after a while, they did say it out loud.
They said yes, Bill.
Charlottetown's proposal is perfectly ethical. It's perfectly all right. But don't you realize that if you go to work that you'll professionalize this thing? That you'll become just another lay therapist? And aren't you the guy who has so often told us that sometimes the good is the enemy of the best? And nothing is good enough for this thing of ours but the best. This is a matter of survival. No, Bill, you can't do this to us. So now you see what is back of this tradition. Who had the wisdom then? The so-called inspired leader, founder, if you like? No. The group conscience spoke up. And how right it was. Oh, here's the one about membership. We've been all over the place on membership. In the early days, there were these terrible fears that somebody would come in and rock the boat. So we talked about the pure alcoholic. What he is has never been made clear. Alcohol was no complication. You couldn't have queer people. Couldn't have people out of the lunatic asylum. I think two of the board of trustees of the AA Foundation are out of there, but... Couldn't have any prisoners. Oh, dear, what would people think? And besides, they might come out of these jails and sandbags. Well, you heard Warden Duffy this morning. How times change. Ah, we had our fears and so many. And often I've told the story about the drunk who came in and did the unforgivable thing. In the early days, we suffered a great deal from piety. So this drunk came in and stood up in the meeting, and he said, "This is a good system, but you don't need this God business. Damn this God business," said he. And the deacon called him into the corner and said, "You can't do this around here." "Oh," he said, "is that so?" He said, "Look at the first page of the book Alcoholics Anonymous, which says that anybody can be a member of Alcoholics Anonymous if they have the alcohol problem. Does that say that I gotta believe in your 12 steps or believe in God or anything? Am I right or am I wrong?" Well, you know, in a way he was speaking for the group conscience. How right he was. We elders had to concede almost that the group or the individual had the right to be wrong if they wish until they learned better. So he stayed, to our great discomfiture, and became the founder of one of our oldest and best groups. He's sitting here in this audience today, oh, I don't know, 12 or 13 years of sober. And now we deacons, who were going to expel him, look at each other and say, supposing we had closed the door of the court of last resort to Jimmy. Where would he be now and all the people he's helped since? Each group should be autonomous, excepting matters affecting other groups or AAs at all. I didn't used to believe that at all. After we got that office started down there in New York, I used to just love to think of sitting down there and running the AA group. I find in recent years that I'm all the time dodging to keep out of their way. No, AA is autonomous. Each group can handle its affairs as it likes, with one important proviso, that its behavior doesn't seriously affect surrounding groups. Therefore, obviously, no group can take the public relations of the whole movement in its hand or of its area. It shouldn't do things that would affect the general welfare, because that would imperil our security. Of course, that too. It's plain as a pipestem. Then each group has one primary purpose. Why, years ago, we used to think that when we got a lot of money together, that we'd go into the educational business, the research business, that we'd do everything for drunks, all the time, every place. But we've learned much better. we know we had better do one thing well, and then many things better. We who are of such peculiar, unique use to the other alcoholics, we shouldn't dissipate our efforts in other enterprises. We should be friendly with those enterprises, but we can't very well endorse or finance them or engage in them. For what we can do face to face with that other alcoholic is a matter of life and death to him. So AA has just one primary purpose, to carry its message to the alcoholic who still suffers. And I partly covered this next point. An AA group ought never endorse, finance, or lend the AA name to any related facility or outside enterprise, lest problems of money, property, and prestige divert us from our primary aim. With the best intention in the world, some of us, as individuals, have gone to work for other enterprises and then have freely used the AA name to attract publicity or funds. Well, we have since learned that that is a profoundly mistaken attitude, that it seriously imperils our safety as a movement. So by the strongest kind of tradition, not of rule, not of law, we are learning better. Every AA group ought to be fully self-supporting, declining outside contributions. Oh, I go back in my experience to a time when I thought AA needed millions. That probably Mr. Rockefeller or somebody ought to put them up. We could do great good with money. Oh, how times have changed. We now find that our charity is not a money charity at all. It is a giving of oneself. Our expenses are trivial. Our earning power collectively is enormous. Of course we're going to pay our own bills. Of course we're going to stand before the community and say, now we have something to give. We are going to abandon that old cry of the drunk, I have no troubles that money can't cure. Of course, this society is going to pay its own small bill. The next tradition, too. Alcoholics Anonymous should remain forever non-professional, but our service centers may employ special workers. Oh, we've been a very long time arriving at that. At one extreme, I described a case where I was going to hire out to do face-to-face therapeutic work. How fortunate for us that never came about. Yet as time has gone on, it's very obvious that we do need certain services performed. Some people will tell you that AA has become big business, a big money proposition. Well, let's see right here in this town how big it is. There are probably 3,000 or 4,000 AAs who live within 20 miles of this hall. I believe they hire one small office. I believe they have a secretary in there and one typist. I wouldn't call that big business for 3,000 or 4,000 AAs. Down in New York, serving 100,000 AAs, and the million yet to come, what do we find? We find 5 paid AA gals doing a beautiful job as secretaries. They're not paid to the 12th cent. For 100,000 people to hire 5 secretaries is not big business. And out in the back room in the office, we have 10 packing boys, clerks, bookkeepers, etc. 10 clerks and bookkeepers is not big business for a movement of 100,000. Take our grapevine. It has a circulation of 20,000. It's becoming a vital force in AA. Every month, volunteers put that thing together. They have to have some help. I think they have 5 paid help down there, none of them alcoholics. 5 paid help to maintain a magazine for 100,000 people. No, thank God it is small business, but vitally important business. And so now we are fully clear that when people are hired to do a special service for us, they ought to be paid according to the service. But under no circumstances is anybody to be paid for the 12th step. So that is our tradition on professionalism. AA as such ought never be organized, but we may create special service boards or committees directly responsible to those they serve. Well, I've covered a part of that, but let's take that last one. But we may create special boards or committees directly responsible to those they serve. Now, when an AA group starts, who are its first servants? The fellow or gal who starts it? His first friend. They are the first informal committee that makes the simple arrangements for the meeting place. They see most of the new people. They do the chores. They probably see the local newspaper. They are your first servant. They are the first self-appointed committee. But when the group has grown a little larger, then you get a reversal of that authority. The old-timers step aside, and sometimes I regret to say they are pushed aside. But the group then takes over the management of its simple affairs through a rotating committee. The authority for services comes up through the bottom instead of down through the top. Take these little intergroup offices, which do such marvels of service in our metropolitan area, whose position, thank God, is strengthening all the time. Usually a few old-timers set those things going, but they have to go to you groups for support. Eventually you have a delegates meeting with a lot of sound and fury, and you get out a committee that conducts this little office. Again, the authority for services comes up through the bottom instead of down through the top. And the people who are serving you are directly responsible for it. Practically the only remaining exception to this situation is the Alcoholic Foundation in New York. There, Dr. Bob and I, some years ago, believing that this movement would need a few services which could not be provided locally, we instituted the so-called foundation, very, very much helped by dear friends of this movement. A board of trustees was formed, and that board of trustees now owns your book, the book Alcoholics Anonymous. It publishes our standard literature. It has charge of your general AA office, which does a world service. The trustees have in charge the public relations for this whole movement. They have your money. They are responsible for the conduct of your newspaper. Therefore, you see, our top service affairs, our overall service affairs, are still in the hands of Dr. Bob and myself and our friends. Now today is the day we think that marks our emergence from adolescence into adulthood. And so it is with great pleasure that I can make to you the announcement that the Board of Trustees have authorized the formation of a yearly conference composed of regional members of AA who can assume a part of the responsibility for your services, your book, your money, your public relations. And I ask you, will you take that responsibility, so vital to our unity, so vital to the million yet to come? I know you will. Alcoholics Anonymous has no opinion on outside issues. Hence, the AA name ought never be drawn into public controversy. You know, one of the marvelous things that we can report about AA is the fact that we never quarrel about the kind of things that men in the outside world quarrel about. We don't quarrel about religion. We don't quarrel about politics. We know that we dare not quarrel, lest these issues divide and split us, as they divide and split the world outside. By some deep instinct, we have always known that we cannot quarrel about such things. The tradition was an unwritten one, almost from the beginning. Almost never have we heard in AA of violent religion or political argument. Yet though there are those here in this room of every single faith and policy. And we shall rue the day if ever such a quarrel does break out. to divide this movement, to come to public attention, so that those alcoholics who haven't yet had their chance may turn their faces to the wall and die and say, this is some more of the same old business. No, we shall never quarrel at the public level about anything important. But we still can reserve the right to fight like the very devil over how to do the most good to drunks. How could I possibly improve on summation of the last two steps? Our public relations policy is based on attraction rather than promotion. We need always maintain personal anonymity at the level of press, radio, and film. Or the last one, again emphasizing the spiritual value of anonymity. Anonymity is the spiritual foundation of all our traditions, ever reminding us to place principles above personality. Oh, let me tell you one more story of a great temptation. The book was under preparation. We had no title for it. Somebody suggested the name Alcoholics Anonymous. In each meeting for months, we voted on titles. Nobody cared too much for that title. But at long last, when the day approached, we had to name the book. That title got to be very, very popular. At first, I had liked the idea. And then something, which certainly was not of God, began speaking to me and saying, Bill, why shouldn't you sign this book? After all, authors sign the book. You've written the text. Sure, the other fellows wrote the stories, but, you know, the text is the important thing. Why don't you sign that book? At that time, the most popular title in the voting was a title called The Way Out. And I thought to myself, well, why not The Way Out by Bill? Now, wouldn't that be? Then I had even another thought. Forgetting dear old Smithy, the rock on whom this movement is founded, I said to myself, why shouldn't this be called The Work? When I came into our little meeting where we were talking about these titles and tactfully insinuated these ideas of signing the book and the Wilson movement, I got that very stony stare. And the group conscience again spoke, and it said, no, you can't do this thing to us. Aren't you the guy who has so often said, good is the enemy of the best? So it became Alcoholics Anonymous. And years later, the March of Time did a newsreel about us. I was in the projection room. An official of the company said, do you realize, Bill Wharton, that this film is going to be shown to 12 million people? That 12 million people who knew little or nothing of Alcoholics Anonymous were now to find out? And then that film unrolled. And as it rolled on, the book Alcoholics Anonymous was held up to view two or three times. And I looked at it. And I must confess that I cried like a baby, thinking how much wiser my fellows had been than me. Asking myself, had this been called The Way Out by Bill Wharton, would the march of time been showing this society to 12 million people? Of course not. Thank God it's Alcoholics Anonymous. Thank God for the conscience of this movement which corrected me. Thank God it's Alcoholics Anonymous. Period. So these, my friends, are the principles upon which this society of ours think we would like to rest our future. Like everything in AA, there is nothing final about these pronouncements. Perhaps time will show us a better way. But in this hour, when we are passing from adolescence into maturity, isn't this a good time for us to ask ourselves, shall we adopt these traditions, those of us who sit here, as our platform? Not as an official act of this movement. This movement will never have or make an official act or pronouncement. But can't we express our sentiment about it? Alcoholics Anonymous, not by any virtue of ours, certainly, but by force of circumstances, is a beautiful democracy, bordering almost on an anarchy. The right of the individual, praise God, is unquestioned, to speak and to be heard. Therefore, I am going to practice this democracy right now. I am going to ask any who oppose these traditions and principles, or any one of them, to register their objection. And don't be ashamed to do so. I'm sure a majority of us will vote for them. But if any oppose them, please know that I'll defend your right to do so. If any oppose them, will they stand up? We have no time for debate. But if any seriously oppose these, will they stand? Then I suppose, by general acclamation, rather than any official act, we who are here in this hour of destiny may now be willing to rise and confirm the tradition of Alcoholics Anonymous. And then, what could be more appropriate than that we ask God's blessing upon this decision in the usual manner? Shall we not rise once more and say the Lord's Prayer? Father, who art in heaven, hallowed be thy name. Thy kingdom come, thy will be done on earth as it is in heaven. Give us this day our daily bread, and forgive us our trespasses, and we forgive those who trespass against us. And lead us not into temptation, but deliver us from evil. For thine is the kingdom, the power, and the glory, forever and ever. Amen.
We hope you've enjoyed this recording. To obtain additional copies, receive a free catalog of AA and Al-Anon talks, or to find out about our tape and CD of the month club, call Encore Audio Archives at 1-800-878-1308 or visit our website at www.12steptapes.com.